This message comes from NPR sponsor, Discover. Tired of not getting a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, y'all. This is Sam's Aunt Betty. This week, a look back on the Fast and Furious franchise with Pop Culture Happy Hour. All right, let's start the show.
Hey, y'all, you're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR. I'm Sam Sanders. Happy 4th of July. We made it. In the everlasting words of President Thomas J. Whitmore from the classic film Independence Day,
we can't be consumed by our petty differences anymore. We will be united in our common interests.
United Perhaps in our common interests.
Today is the 4th of July.
You know, we are living in a very divided world these days. On politics, on whether to wear masks or to get vaxxed. Even when it comes to basic truths, like which is the best Beyoncé album. It's B-Day. I'm right. Anywho, in this time of division, what better common denominator, what greater uniter than the Fast and the Furious?
Y'all ever thought about the wild missions we've been on?
We've taken out planes, trains, tanks. I'm not going to even think about the submarine.
And now we got cars. To mark our most patriotic holiday and the release of the latest film in this franchise, this week we're bringing you a very special episode from our friends over at NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour. They had me on recently for two episodes in the guest chair. We're going to play one for you now. In this episode, we look back on the entire Fast and the Furious franchise history and what that movie series impact has been since the first one debuted two decades ago. I know, two decades ago. All right, here is my chat with the folks over at NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour, all about the greatest film franchise of all time, The Fast and the Furious.
Twenty years ago, The Fast and the Furious debuted as a scruffy car culture movie, and it was a hit. It was followed by two sequels that didn't quite satisfy, so they regrouped. And since then, it's become the blockbuster machine. Some love it, some hate it, some love to hate it, some hate to love it.
When you do this much business for this many years, it's hard not to have an impact and to feel the impact of everything else that's going on in film. I'm Aisha Harris.
And I'm Linda Holmes. And today we're talking about the Fast and Furious franchise's legacy and impact on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. So don't go away.
Support for NPR and the following message come from FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu. Support for NPR and the following message come from Jarl and Pamela Moan, thanking the people who make public radio great every day and also those who listen. This message comes from NPR sponsor, Discover. Here's a familiar situation. You have a question about your credit card. You call the number for help and can't get a hold of anyone. If only you had a Discover card. With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. A real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Capitalism touches every part of our lives.
Capitalism is a giant force that I don't understand.
I feel that it's a very safe system.
I'm constantly in fear of losing my job.
It is our biggest success and our biggest failure.
On this special series from Throughline, Capitalism.
Listen now to the Throughline podcast from NPR.
Welcome back. Here with me and Aisha is Sam Sanders, the host of NPR's It's Been a Minute. Welcome, Sam.
Thanks for having me.
And also joining us is NPR White House correspondent Aisha Rasko. Hi, Aisha.
Hello.
So last week we talked about F9, the latest film in the franchise. We separated this discussion because we really want to take a breath and talk about these movies kind of as a whole. It's been a pretty bumpy ride for them in some ways. They lost their leading man when Paul Walker died in an accident in 2013. They've kind of reset several times. But the central point of it involves Vin Diesel playing Dominic, who is a kind of a, started out as kind of a petty criminal and now is sort of a global spy slash crime fighter. Originally, his gang was infiltrated by Paul Walker, who played an undercover police officer. But gradually, of course, sort of Point Break style, they became allies and friends. And then they developed this big team of people who go around and respond now to various emergencies around the world. They've actually had a variety of directors over the course of this franchise. The first one was directed by Rob Cohen. But then they started having a lot of really interesting folks behind the camera. John Singleton, Justin Lin, James Wan, F. Gary Gray. Most of the scripts between Tokyo Drift, which was the third movie, and the eighth movie, the scripts were from Chris Morgan. He ducked out of F9. But you still have kind of this blockbuster franchise that relies on this team that fights bad guys. Aisha Rasko, were you a Fast and Furious person from the beginning or more recently?
I will be honest. I did not get into it in the early movies. And it wasn't because I didn't like them and I might have actually gone to see them in the movies. It's just, it was just, they were movies, they were out there, right? I was probably pretty young then too, I think, because I'm pretty young now too. But... I was very young then. And so I think I just, wasn't particularly into it. But then, and they went through those phases where it seemed like Vin Diesel maybe thought he was too big for Fast and the Furious, so he left. But then it was like he came back and Paul Walker, and it seemed like they decided, this is who we are. This is what we're going to do. We're going to make this movie over and over again. And that's when I started getting into it, when everybody started coming back and they started doing these massive casts, and it was like, why are they saving the world? What is a heist? Are they James Bond? What's going on? It was very far removed from car racing, and it was very much just them, driving around in fast cars. And I love that. Like, I love the absurdity of it, and them, like, they're about to fall off a cliff and then they're flipping and they jumping out the car. And then that was just exciting to me. And I just like, with these movies, I can never remember one from the other. They all are kind of like one big movie to me. They're like
one
big family. That's the other thing that I love about them is they're all about family.
Yeah. It's amazing because that family thing has taken this franchise so far, and it's such a, in some ways, it's such an afterthought. They tend to kind of include it in the final scene when there's like a big barbecue at someone's house, and then they all talk about it's all family, and they toast and they drink beers. But like, it doesn't come up for the rest of the movie a lot of the time. And frequently when they scatter after a mission, like then you find out like a year and a half later, they haven't seen each other. And it's like, well, it's all about family, except that all you do together is missions. And then you go off and
not take care of your kids.
But I think it kind of makes you feel like you can connect to it in this weird way, because it's like, isn't all of our lives just about family and work and all that? So they do their work and then they have their family. That's how they survive, with their connections to other people. I'm trying to get a little deep here.
Sure.
They connect to other people. And I also like that there's a lot of redemption in Fast and the Furious, because people go from being bad to being good.
They do. All the time.
And they do. It's true. Well, especially, I think especially if they discover that like they really only want to use you as a villain once. And so then if they're going to bring you back, I think this is what happened with Jason Statham. If they're going to bring you back, they have to sort of bring you back as a better person. They want to switch up the villains every time. So some of the villains have been through some level of redemption. Sam, are you a Fast and the Furious guy?
I am. And I think there's three big reasons I love this franchise, and I will break them down briefly. First reason, Charlize Theron's White Lady Dreadlocks, whatever movie she first showed.
F8.
Of the franchise.
Oh, no.
Remember that?
Yes.
Now, and they cut him off for F9. Now she's got like a little bowl cut situation happening,
which is interesting. Mm-hmm.
It's not quite the shoulder length cut. It's like the more severe.
Very severe.
Yeah, it is the little mushroom.
What is Charlize Theron if not severe?
It's true. In these movies, she certainly is. I'm sorry. What's your next reason, Sam?
No,
what's
okay. Next 2 points. I love this franchise because of the way it handles plot and the way that it handles race. Let's do plot first. These movies have stopped caring about plot. One could argue they never did, and that's what makes them great action films. I found myself, as I left the theater after F9, saying, I'm so glad they didn't let the plot get in the way of some really good car chase scenes. And then I immediately compared it to the experience I have whenever I go to see some movies from the Marvel Cinematic Universe, like Infinity War. Like, these movies spend so much time putting all the plot together from all the comic books and making sure that everything is sewed up with the nice bow on top. It gets in the way. And Fast and the Furious, they don't care. They really don't care. They want you to have a good time. And one could make the case that as the Fast and Furious franchise has moved from being a series of car films to really being a series of superhero films, I think it is on its way to becoming a more enjoyable superhero franchise than whatever Marvel is doing that makes me fall asleep in their films.
I don't know if I agree with that.
No, I gotta agree with Sam. Because I've never been a Marvel person, and
I get it.
It's too much plot. It's too much plot.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've often been heard to say that there is entirely too much mythology and backstory in a lot of those films, and they spend too much time setting it up. It's not that there's too much, but it's that they have to re-explain it every time. So my take has sometimes been like, just tell me there's a box, and everyone wants the box, and then just go. And this is very close to that. F9 is very close to that.
Very
it's
close.
Just
they're just like magnets, space, satellite.
Well, and it's like we got half a ball. We got to find the other half of the ball.
And then the key.
Yes. And that I can understand. And you don't spend a lot of time setting that up. They just kind of do it. You know,
they just
kind of say go.
The last reason I love this film franchise is because of the way it handles race. So Wesley Morris first made this argument back in 2011 when he was an opinion columnist and a writer for the Boston Globe. And he actually won a Pulitzer for his review of Fast Five, which made the case that the Fast and Furious series was the first truly racially progressive cinematic force of a film series. He says it's a collection of movies that puts blacks, whites, Asians, Hispanics, and various combinations on equal footing, and they don't make a big deal about it. He argued back then that it was the most progressive force in Hollywood because he said, where else would you see such a weird mashup of so many different kinds of people who really don't think more than 3 or 4 seconds about their differences? I still feel the same way about these movies. You know, they are not Oscar-worthy, but what they're doing visually, I think, is good. It's kind of nice and escapist to see a movie full of people of different races that isn't going to pat itself on the back about that. They just do the movie.
I think that's fair to say. I have had moments, and like, obviously, I would not presume to be the one to pass judgment on this. I have sometimes thought about the use of Ludacris and Tyrese Gibson as like the pure comic relief, the kind of like wisecracking comic relief.
Yeah.
I have sometimes wished that there were more Black participants in that main core cast who were not comic relief. Do you know what I mean?
I totally got that. And then I wanted to feel that same way too. But then in F9... you've got Tyrese's character putting duct tape on his old spacesuit as the Pontiac goes to space.
It's true.
And I forgive it all because it's just good.
Look, it's just sort of thinking through like representation alone as like I think I agree with Wesley Morris to the point that this franchise has given a lot of work and undoubtedly money, not only to a diverse cast, but a diverse group of directors as well. And I think that's very cool. Also, I think that's tightly, tightly connected to the international box office power of these films, which is one of the reasons why they make absolutely ridiculous amounts of money, you know, as a lot of action blockbusters do. But I definitely think you're right.
All right, coming up, more on the Fast and the Furious franchise with Pop Culture Happy Hour. We talk about where else this franchise might go. Spoiler alert, they've already been to space.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Hulu. Dive into the chilling new Hulu original series, Under the Bridge, the riveting adaptation of the acclaimed true crime book. Based on shocking true events, Under the Bridge tells the haunting story of a murder that lays bare a small community's darkest secrets. Go deep into the hidden world of the town's tormented teenagers as detectives race to solve the sinister crime. Starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone, Under the Bridge is now streaming with new episodes Wednesdays, only on Hulu.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Charles Schwab with their original podcast, Choiceology. Choiceology is a show about the psychology and economics behind people's decisions. Download the latest episode and subscribe at schwab.com/podcast.
This message comes from NPR sponsor REI Co-op. REI has gear, clothing, classes, and advice for camping and glamping, biking and hiking, axing and snacksing, backpacking, and another outdoor thing that rhymes with backpacking. Visit your local REI Co-op or REI.com for the million and one ways you can opt outside.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Mint Mobile. From the gas pump to the grocery store, inflation is everywhere. So Mint Mobile is offering premium wireless starting at just $15 a month. To get your new phone plan for just $15, go to mintmobile.com/switch.
Today on the show, in honor of this holiday weekend, we are bringing you a very special episode from our friends over at NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour. It's an episode all about the Fast and the Furious film franchise.
Aisha Harris, are you a Fast and Furious person? You are. I know. I was kind of delighted and thrilled to find out that you are a Fast and Furious person.
I mean, I am a relatively recent convert to this franchise. I resisted it for years. And I don't think the first film that I intentionally saw that wasn't just like on TV in the background was the seventh film. I saw that in theaters. That was, of course, sort of probably the most emotional one because that was the final film that Paul Walker was in. And they did a very beautiful send-off at the end of that. But I did go back and rewatch last year when we were all very much under lockdown still. Ari and I watched together the entire series again. And it was interesting to watch the evolution of the series because I realized why I didn't watch the earlier ones because it has that MTV spring break look where there's always half-naked girls just prancing around. I will say one thing I've noticed is that over the years, they still have that one scene where there's just women dancing around cars for whatever reason. But in F9, they were all fully clothed. And that's progress, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe. Anyway, yeah. I like it better now that it's not just about car mechanics. Because I don't care if it's a Dodge Charger. Like, just make things blow up, please. Do that for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I also, speaking of race, I have a couple clips I want to play that I think, to me, sort of symbolize the weird, sometimes fun, sometimes awkward way in which this franchise handles race. And they're both from the second film, Too Fast, Too Furious, which introduces us to Tyrese Gibson's character, Roman.
Let your man go, huh?
Drop it. I don't want to talk about it.
Drop it, hell. I want to hear about this, homie.
I said forget about it, cuz.
That was Paul Walker. And here he is again.
Open a garage together. A garage?
How we going to do that, bruh?
Pockets ain't empty, cuz.
Oh, boy.
So in those clips, you have Paul Walker and Tyrese Gibson. And Paul Walker, for whatever reason, in the second film, took on a black scent, a weird sort of affect where he just kept saying "cuh" and "cuz," as in, like, it was the weirdest thing. And Paul Walker, to begin with, I'm sorry, was not a great actor. And here, I don't know who gave him the note to do this.
In front of John Singleton.
In front of John Singleton, of all people. But I guess John Singleton was like, I'll just roll with this.
I bet he asked for it. I bet he was one who asked for it. He was the director.
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah. But like, it's just weird to hear Paul Walker, this like very poster boy for Abercrombie and Fitch, to, like trying to adopt Tyrese Gibson's affect. And it's icky, but it's also just like very comical and makes it weirdly endearing to me. And then, of course, he dropped it after that. But he was just like, yeah, for this movie, I'm going to do this. And we're all going to roll with it. And people who love this franchise know that that is a classic moment. And I appreciate it.
It's a sort of a growing pains moment to me in some ways, because this process, you know, in the first movie, Dom's crew is mostly white. And so it's mostly Dom's crew against, you know, there's a East Asian crew, and there's, you know, there's it's sort of differently racially coded in the first one, I think. And this is sort of right in the point where they're beginning the process of kind of reassembling what these teams are going to be and figuring out who all the players are going to be. And I think that diversity in that cast that is so widely praised, and I think rightly so, took a little while to kind of develop and stabilize. Mm. Perhaps if you had a more diverse cast from the beginning, you would not have had Paul Walker doing that.
Maybe. But it's another reason to love the franchise, because they grow and learn and get better.
Yeah. They do. Although, and in the latest one, they refer to John Cena, who obviously does not look like Vin Diesel's brother, but then they talk about the diversity of the Toretto's and mm-hmm. saying that they didn't know there was a Nordic strain.
Yeah.
It's camp. It's
the Charlize Theron character refers to the mixed bloodlines of the family. Yes. And I sort of had that like, yikes. I was like the yikes emoji when that happened.
And yeah. Then she said miscegenation. No, I'm kidding.
But she did say mixed race.
She at least said mixed bloodlines. And I was
or
like,
mixed bloodline. Yeah.
I was like, ooh.
Well, it's weird because as in life, the movie plays in a really interesting way with Vin Diesel's sort of ethnic ambiguity. Mm-hmm. And just even the person they get, the people they cast in F9 as his younger self and then also his father, it's like just this really, like, is he Italian? Is he mixed, like half black, half white, or is he Latino? He could be anything. And I think they really just go with that.
One thing I do want to say when you talk about growing is, and I was struck, I kind of went back through the trailers of some of the older ones. And so you see all the half-naked. The first one seemed a little bit more steamy than this one. And I appreciate how now that they're older and they have kids and it's a lot less steamy. It's just work.
The sex element, the first movie, if you look at that trailer, it's promising very much, as you have said, a kind of like a skimpily dressed women sort of setup and people making out and having sex. And there's like very little sex in these movies anymore. Mm-hmm. These are like old married people now. Yes. And like the
franchise itself grew up, finished college, got married and had kids.
You can certainly assume that these married people are still having plenty of sex, but the movies are not showing it anymore. Mm-hmm. They've evolved quite a bit. Quite a bit from that. I just want to ask one closing question. What would you like to see next from this franchise? Aisha Rasko, what would you like to see next?
So I do think, and this may be controversial, I do think that all good things have to come to an end, even if they make a lot of money. You're coming up on the 10th movie. I think that may be a good time to at least take a break, because as we said, they went to space this time. There's only so much more that you can do. Mm-hmm. Now, I think what I would like to see is them go to someplace maybe that's very cold, like Alaska.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I remember them already being like in the Arctic or Antarctic, because Tyrese and Luda was like spinning out on the ice.
Yeah, that was
ice shade.
That was the 8th one with Charlize Theron.
Okay.
But you could have a whole movie set
ice
world.
Have they gone to the depths of hell yet? Can they do that?
Underwater. That's all I can think of right now.
Underground.
Underground.
Right.
And really, I do think shorter movies, I don't know why movies have to be so long. I need more cars, more chasing. And they could also, you know, jump between buildings again. I really like that. That was my favorite.
I like that too. And my only bad news for you is I believe they're already committed to two more in this main series.
This is the beginning of the trilogy.
That's good news. That's real good news.
So we've got enough time for one that's underwater and one that's very cold. Sam, what do you still want to see from Fast and Furious?
I want even less plot. I want all of them to be 90 minutes or less. And what I really, really, really want is a Tyrese and Ludacris spinoff in the vein of Hobbs and Shaw.
There you go.
They're such a winning duo. They have such great chemistry. They're fun to watch. They're hilarious. I just want to watch them do stuff. And I would love for the two of them to just have their own film and or franchise. They're strong enough actors to actually carry a film and do some really good press for it. And I don't know why we aren't giving these two men their flowers right now. They're fun to watch.
They are fun
Give
to watch.
Give Tyrese and Luda a spinoff.
I got to push back on that, Sam, a little bit.
Wait, we were agreeing this whole conversation, and now.
Got to spice it up. No, I agree. They're a winning duo. I love them. I think they are a garnish and not the entire meal. But maybe that's just me.
So we call a bowl of cilantro here on Pop
yes.
Culture Happy Hour.
Yes.
I would eat a bowl of cilantro if it was fed to me by Ludacris and Tyrese.
All right.
That sounded weird. I take it back.
Take it back.
Well, yeah. Well, what I would like to see is... Okay, so I was thinking about this because, Aisha, you said underground, and then I was like, ooh, maybe they could throw in Fraggles. And then yes. I was like, puppets. Why not puppets? It's already weird. They've already gone to space. So that's what I would love to see. I would also love to see, and we didn't really talk about this, but I would love to just see a little bit more action from the women. I think that, you know, Michelle Rodriguez as Letty has talked about working on that character and making her more interesting and not just like the sourpuss. Like, is she happy? Does she have more feelings? I also would love to see more fights. We do get a fun fight scene with both Jordana Brewster and Letty and Michelle Rodriguez. I want to see more of that. It seems very rare. I can think of maybe a few other like hands-on fist fights happening with the Letty character, including the great Ronda Rousey scene.
Yes.
I want more of that. I want to see a little bit more of the women being able to, you know, do a bit more, because I think that's one area where it's still, this franchise still kind of lacks for me. But yep. Yeah, we'll see. They've got two more movies to do this.
It's true. Well, and my needs are simple, less hacking and less guns. I have a feeling I'm going to lose both of those bets, but that brings us to the end of our show here with our little family. Thanks to all of you for being here.
Thanks for having
Thank
me.
You.
This was fun.
Thanks again to our friends over at NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast. We have another episode in that Pop Culture Happy Hour feed that is just a discussion and a review of the latest Fast and Furious movie, F9. And in that episode, which you can go over and listen to now, I present my grand theory that this movie, F9, it is heteronormative camp in the best way. All right, listeners, till next time, be good to yourselves. As always, thanks for listening. I'm Sam Sanders. We'll talk soon.
This message comes from NPR sponsor REI Co-op. REI has gear, clothing, classes, and advice for camping and glamping, biking and hiking, axing and snacksing. Visit your local REI co-op or REI.com for the million and one ways to opt outside. This message comes from NPR sponsor Rosetta Stone, an expert in language learning for 30 years. Right now, NPR listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership to 25 different languages for 50% off. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
All that sitting and swiping, your body is adapting to your technology. Learn how and what you can do about it.
I really felt like the cloud in my brain kind of dissipated. Once I started realizing what a difference these little breaks were making, there's no turning back for me.
Take NPR's Body Electric Challenge. Listen to the series wherever you get your podcasts.